documentary on News Talk.
Now on documentary and drama on News Talk, Groundbreakers Series 2. This episode features Anita Hayes, who established Irish Seed Savers, dedicating her life's work to safeguard our future food crops. This is Groundbreaker, Anita Hayes.
I never knew that you can grow over 70 different varieties of tomatoes in Ireland, that we have a fantastic climate to grow nuts in, that we can grow onions that store all through the winter and have a smell that brings me back to my childhood when my dad used to grow onions in our back garden. There are hundreds and hundreds of varieties of heritage crops that can grow and thrive in Ireland, in stony soil, wet soil, dry soil, and we nearly lost them all. According to the UN, about 75% of the genetic diversity of agricultural crops has already been lost in the last century. This is one of our greatest threats to food security that we face. We are at risk of losing the knowledge, tradition, and skills of food crops that can adapt to local climate. But there are individuals, farmers, charities across Ireland that are working to preserve what remains. Their work has focused on the most precious source of all, the seed. For all the information on these crops, their diversity, their resilience and taste are held when in the plant's seed. Precious seeds that we need to collect, protect and grow. In East Clare, there is a bank that stores for the state these precious seeds. The bank was established by Irish Seed Savers, who have created a community of seed savers all over Ireland, who have helped to establish and maintain this national collection.
But if we come in here, this is the actual seed bank. So you'll start to hear the whir of the fridges. You can feel the coolness as you come in. This is Ireland's only living seed bank for food crops.
This is Gillian Attamore from Irish Seed Savers.
Of the 800 varieties that we have stored in here, every year we will take a number of them and we will grow them out again. That's what's keep the seed alive, by continuously growing it out and making it available to the public so that it adapts to the local climate, the local growing conditions.
That's a massive resource. Like, one day that will be the most important bank in the country.
That's Jason Horner, organic grower and seed saver. In addition to the living seed bank that holds over 800 varieties of open-pollinated heirloom seeds, Seed Savers also has a field bank that houses the National Irish Heritage Apple Collection with its 180 varieties of apple trees.
We're walking through here into Dr. Lamb's orchard and we can hear all the birds. So come on and we'll have a look. It's not just a living museum. As I said, part of our remit is practice conservation through use. So every year our trees and our seeds are made available and, you know, they're all over Ireland. They're in gardens, they're in farms, they're in allotments, they're on balconies, they're everywhere. We are funded by the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine on behalf of the state to preserve and protect. We have this treasure here now to protect for future generations, but they're part of our cultural heritage.
And all of this began with one groundbreaking woman, Anita Hayes.
And we're walking into Anita's garden. This was the first piece of land cultivated by Anita. Yeah, so this is where it all started, yeah. Without her passion, it would have been lost. That's Anita's legacy, and I suppose her gift to the people of Ireland is that our food crop heritage is preserved and conserved here at Irish Seed Savers.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is sometimes when I see, oh, you know, the ones to watch, she's never been in those kind of things.
Dr. Claire O'Grady Walsh, environmentalist and human rights activist.
To me, Anita Hayes is one of the great influencers of the last century in Ireland. And I don't think it will be appreciated until hopefully the documentaries like this. And Anita comes with Tommy. I mean, I know this program's just about Anita, but Tommy is just one of nature's gentlemen. I mean, just absolutely wonderful. But actually, there's such a depth and richness to the influence that Anita has brought in retracing those steps for us.
Anita Hayes was born in the American Midwest. and moved to Ireland in 1989 with her husband, musician Tommy Hayes. Anita's study in ecological agriculture and her work with Seed Savers Exchange in Iowa meant she was acutely aware of the loss of genetic biodiversity and the resulting threat to food security. Anita brought this knowledge and expertise to Ireland, but found that there was no similar organisation here to connect to and to continue her work in seed saving. Jason Horner.
She came to Ireland and realised that nobody was doing this work and decided to take it on. And it's like, God, how do you do that? Like, how do you even begin to think about that? Like, you know, that's one thing I found. It's so easy to start things, but to actually have the tenacity to keep that going, like, yeah.
That is very kind to hear. So I came with, like, no expectation of anything. No Irish-American background. We ended up in St. Mullins at the foot of the Black Stairs. And we had a little pot of money. And at that time, a little pot of money could buy you a little plot of land and an old ruin. And so that's what we did. And none of this was intellectual. You know, we had this little baby at that point, and it was just a big adventure. You know, just this spacious, silent place. Just so beautiful. Just the silence, the blessed silence to see. So we were completely self-sustaining on our little farm. You know, that dream that everybody still is doing, young people are still doing. So we started, and I had just come from my training and here and had all my professional things in my mind, like rainfall and soil type, and got in touch with Chagask and said, you know, this is where we are, this is the soil type, this is the amount of rainfall. Thinking about growing a commercial crop of garlic, I wrote to them, you know, could you give me some advice? And they sent back a letter that said, well, that hasn't been done, and it actually isn't suitable to do. Hasn't been done, can't be done. And said to Tommy, like, huh? Look at the land. I mean, look at the land. Look at the soil. You could grow anything. Being a bit of a stubborn person, we harvested 10,000 head of garlic. And the neighbors, you could smell it all the way down the lane. And people didn't eat garlic or buy garlic. They must have just thought we were completely bonkers. Well, we probably were kind of, but happy. The kind of germination of Seed Savers happened in complete freedom. You know, complete freedom. And the template of it all is actually the Seed Savers in the States. So none of this was my idea. You know, they're kind of like the mother of all of us in terms of that citizen science thing. I wanted to find other people who had done seed work or were doing seed work, and I couldn't find any. And so that began, and I'm reading the Irish Times. Michael Viney had his eye on nature. So I wrote to him and said, this is what I want to do. You know, would you mind putting something in the paper saying, is there anything out there? And he said, oh, that's fine, I'll do that. And then Common Ground, which was kind of, I think, the first sort of organic farming alternative magazine thing, people got in touch and said, what a great idea. What was really interesting was this was at a really important time politically in seed saving, because it was the burst of the GM seeds. What I had learned in school touched me so deeply, and I only realized recently where all this actually came from in me. You know, learning then, so that was 35 years ago, that 70% of the genetic heritage of food was gone then. And then the GM crop thing happened. So there was, you know, young people that were coming, and myself as well, there felt like there was a really passionate reason to do something positive.
Anita, along with other volunteers, set about saving seeds in order to preserve Ireland's food crop heritage. Anita also started to look at native Irish apple trees. We once had a vast selection of different apples, all with unique tastes, textures, and resilience. The first collection of Irish native apples was made in the 1940s by Dr. Keith Lamb. He created an orchard from apple trees grafted from all over Ireland. This orchard was tragically destroyed. Anita Hayes, working with Dr. Michael Henretti of University College Dublin, and Dr. Lamb began to travel the length and breadth of Ireland to graft once again a collection of Irish heritage apples from extinction.
This is all while we were in Carlow. So I was on such an adventure. Started going out on the road, would pack in a child in the car, and there was always a local historian who would be so willing to help.
Local historians such as Charlie Robinson from Cavan, who lived with his brothers Michael and Tom Joe, self-taught men who were master beekeepers, furniture makers, clock and antique repair experts.
Very gentlemanly, very educated by themselves. So he welcomed me in and he was very interested. He understood immediately what I was talking about. And he said as well, I'll help you, you know, I'll take you around. And we spent a decade of autumns together going around. And they loved the whole idea of Seed Savers and they got it completely. Oh, there's a lot of Cavan varieties there, all there from Charlie. Again, these people that just can encompass this capacity to just take in and learn and be open and be curious. I was so privileged to know them. So it was a really lovely time. And we moved to Clare for family reasons for our sons. And then things really changed when we got here. It was really a lot of work, getting to be a huge amount of work doing all of it, writing the newsletter, saving the seeds, researching. And actually, Clare was very fertile soil. East Clare is such a special place. It is magical. There's so many really incredible people with big ideas and there's space for them. There's space for them. This is the groundbreaking thing. If you have an agenda before you begin, you don't see what's there. Anyway, what started out as a load of crack had become a huge responsibility. And we weren't getting paid. It wouldn't have happened if we were like trying to establish an organization and expecting to be paid. And at a certain point, once all those apples were coming, we were grafting, and we realized the value of what people had shared in utter trust. Tommy and I were like, and Tommy was keeping us going, playing his drum. Gosh, what are we going to do? You know, should we have a business? And we just sat and thought about it and thought, I can't. So the business idea kind of went out the window. This can't be a business. This has to be a charity. So this woman came to visit one day and saw me on my knees, literally, and said, gosh, if you ever want to try and get a FOSS scheme going, I'm willing to help you. And I was like, oh, my God. Sent from heaven. And so Bridget Carlin did all the hard work of actually making that happen. And that drew in the first core of people, some of whom you're talking to, Kevin, who's the first person to come and begin to work with the apples. And all these people without whom nothing would have happened. You know, really, that's the amazing thing. I'm so excited to hear about what you find of people who are doing what I did, the carry-on from it.
Kevin Dudley is a seed saver and organic farmer from Clochjordan Community Farm. Kevin was Irish Seed Saver's first dedicated orchard manager. An expert apple grafter, he helped build a collection from specimens of old trees gathered from around the country.
This is how she's so special. She understands that she's just part of it. She's just part of this web. And the time when she did what she did, you know, Tommy and her coming back from America and her thinking that Ireland was going to be this diverse food crops and there was nobody there, and then her putting up posters in old people's homes and things. And old people saying, oh, there's an apple tree, you have to go down past the cemetery and over the wall. And so we were doing that for years, that's what we were doing, kind of thing. But she's the mother. She is. You know, it was just a group of us that started the Seed Savers. It was a FOSS course. There wasn't a lot of employment around the Scariff area. She just instilled this into us, this importance and this connection. You know, when you look at a seed in your hand, it holds all the potential of the past and all the potential into the future.
And all this potential is preserved with seed saving. Jason Horner.
And the kale, see the little yellow flowers on the edge of the kale there? That's the first sign of the kale flowers.
And farm bats, so where the seed.
Yeah, so they'll send up multiples of those, and then the bees will pollinate them and cross them all amongst each other, and then come July, there'll be dry seed pods on those.
Seed saving is allowing a plant grow through its full life cycle to flower, whereupon it produces seeds, which we can then use to grow the following year. That's the basic of it. And in doing that, in an Irish context, if we keep doing that with varieties that we're familiar with and that do well here, those seeds are actually zeroing in on soil conditions, climatic conditions, and are becoming much more embedded in Irish conditions.
But this is only possible if the seeds are open pollinated seeds. Most of the seeds we buy now are hybrid seeds, which can produce more uniformity in their crops. However, with hybrids, you cannot simply save and share the seeds, as there is no genetic integrity within the seed itself. The seeds have to be brought new each year. Seeds are governed by seed laws, which are constantly evolving. The laws are complex and restrictive, controlling seed production on a large global scale.
So open pollinated seeds, anybody can save open pollinated seeds. They'll save true to type, whereas a hybrid is two inbred lines crossed to produce an F1. And in that situation, you can't save the seed because it won't breed true to type.
And in terms of seed savers, then, what are these other people are doing? It's not just for yourself. You know, and you're doing something that everybody did behind you.
And there are so many extraordinary seed savers and environmentalists that went before us. People such as Vanda Shifra from India, or Dr. Maluka from Uganda, or Nikola Favlov, a Soviet plant geneticist renowned for his work in identifying centres of crop origin and diversity.
So Favlov, who established the first gene bank, he was sort of my hero. I had my picture of him and his diary, but he was such an intellect, he wanted to work with other scientists. So he collected these young people around him and women. A lot of women worked with him, and they began their journey around the world trying to find these centres of agriculture and working with peasants, basically. And very unusual for a scientist at that time to look and see what they were doing and think that might have some relevance to what science was doing. So he began his journey traveling almost the entire world, horseback, llama back, foot.
Like Anita would teach us about Nikolai Vavilov, you know, what he saw when he was out exploring, especially in like Uzbekistan and places. You know, if you want to find the interesting stuff, you have to go where the environment is harsh. So the mountains, people, they would have tiny little fields, and they might have up to like 16 different types of seed crop growing there.
He was trying to fight famine. He was under a lot of pressure in Russia to follow a certain line of research, because that was the party line that Stalin was promoting about genetics and plant genetics. And Vavilov, he was picked up by the Stasi and put in a gulag, and he actually starved to death in a place where he had helped collect things to prevent famine. But his collection didn't die and pass away because he had this enormous research stations, but they had been creating the world's first gene bank in St. Petersburg then, the Vavilov Institute, it's called now. So we went to the Vavilov Institute and said, do you have any Irish seeds? Do you have any Irish seeds? And they sent the grain collection. Little packages, tied, red sealing wax, you know, just sent without going, who the hell are you? This is intellectual property. Okay. You know, I did say that we were a seed-saving organization, but, you know, it was this sharing, this knowing this belongs to everybody. And they set the Irish green pea, which a lot of people in Ireland are growing now.
When we dug up our back garden, it was a very rainy summer, 2004, and it was the first year that we were growing heritage varieties of seed from Irish seed savers. We realised after a good few weeks of summer that the like French varieties and other varieties of pea had died off, but this Irish green pea just was the gift that kept giving. And for weeks and weeks longer than all of the others, like right into September, there was peas. And it just completely got me. I was kind of fascinated by the pea, and then I just looked up in the book, what was this pea, you know, and realised that it was actually the founders of Seed Savers, Anita and Tommy Hayes, who had rematriated, as we say now, rematriated a lot of the seeds from the seed banks across the world. And the Irish green pea actually had been saved by Nikolai Vavilov, a great Russian scientist, back in the 1920s. It obviously loved being back in its nice rainy climate because it was just so abundant. And that got me really, really interested because I thought, this is what this is about. This is adaptability.
That's it. They will adapt to the environment. And so when you're looking at climate change, how the seed could adapt to the environment by being grown out over time, which is what we do here at Irish Seed Savers. So all our seeds are adapted to the local climate. It's about food security and having that in the hands of farmers so that they don't have to buy F1 seeds, that they're not constrained to buying seeds that are produced by four large agrochemical companies. In the past 100 years, I think it's 75% food crop diversity has been lost in Europe alone. And this is true, like the trend and the introduction of F1 hybrid seeds instead of using the open pollinated seeds, which will grow true to type, which you can save the seed from and put your own food security in your own hands and not have a reliance on imported seed, let's say here in Ireland.
And seed, unlike land, is mobile. And so it was possible to colonise something that became a kind of a mobile technological artefact, as they kind of call it in the literature. And so I realised that seed is really hugely, hugely important. And that's why seed sovereignty obviously is important. Seed sovereignty is a very specific thing. It's the right to sow, save, use, share and determine your own seed future as a community. And
so that we're sovereign over what we're actually doing. Going back not so far, a farmer would have saved seeds from the best of their crops. That was their fallback for the following year that they had seed and that they were developing varieties. Then we handed all that over to seed companies and now hopefully some of us are taking it back.
The fight back against it is really strong, as I'm sure you'll see even in our small little country, carrying on the work that was begun at Seed Savers in their own way.
That's so rewarding as well. You know, there's a reason that there's now horticultural therapy. You know, when you take a seed, even the most hardened person, when you put a seed in the ground, it's like a connection and ownership to look after it and nurture it and grow it. But we tend to have lost what our ancestors would have known. But we can now gather from other different cultures because we have the technology to communicate across vast distances. And so we can share. And I've got to say, that came out of Seed Savers when I was there. That was part of it. You know, we respected the land, we respected the people who were there before us. It gives us back our connection to something that's invisible and can't be bought or sold. It just has to be found, kind of thing.
Like, and I feel very, very emotional about the fact that there were seeds brought back to Ireland and brought back into use now in agriculture and in gardening and that in Ireland. I just love it when I hear that there's bakers now working with old heritage grains and that there's, you know, field trialing going on. There's amazing work being done by people. I mean, and you see, it's not like as if it's some sort of museum piece, like these heritage varieties of of seed. And if I wasn't an amateur gardener myself, I wouldn't be able to even say anything about it. But I have seen myself the yield and productivity of these really resilient, old, forgotten crops. That's the thing. And it's one thing for me to do that as a hobby gardener in an urban setting here in Dublin. But it's another thing when you actually go to the people who are working the front line, trying to grow food to eat to survive. And they're saying, this is the best buffer we have against climate change and hunger, is the more diversity we have in our fields.
And again, it goes back to us losing that ability to save seeds on farm and leaving it to corporations or even small seed companies to do our seed saving, really. Like, and their interest in saving varieties would have been purely commercial, and obviously then varieties that didn't sell, they stopped producing. And once, if they weren't producing and nobody else was producing, those varieties were lost.
But we're still very dependent on key staple crops across the planet, and that's really dangerous. But it's very interesting whenever you're looking at any of the literature about agroecology or any of the literature about loss of biodiversity or agrobiodiversity and the, you know, the loss of our agricultural systems, that the Irish famine is always used as an example. So I kind of feel there has to be some resonance deep within us in Ireland to actually understand and really appreciate what bringing back a lot of diversity into farming again really would mean. If I had more energy, I'd love to kind of really start a tillage campaign here, because, you know, there is a complete correlation between the horrendous price, low price of buying vegetables in the shop and the true value of growing them and of the knowledge of farmers of growing them.
You're listening to Groundbreaker, Anita Hayes, on Documentary and Drama on News Talk. You're listening to Documentary and Drama on News Talk. This is Groundbreaker, Anita Hayes.
I mean, in many ways, that's one of the biggest problems. We've devalued produce to the point where, like, if you can buy a kilo of carrots in the shop for 50 cents, I guarantee that the grower can't produce them for that. We're importing huge amounts of vegetables, like.
Like, we've got an incredible climate. Anita was the one who always said, Ireland is one of the best places in the world to grow food, you know? It has such a temperate climate. It is very important that this intergenerational thing now happens, that we actually train people up again, you know what I mean? And that's what has been such a gift to us, is that there are a lot more people who are seed saving now, that we've brought back apple grafting, that an awful lot of lost skills we shouldn't have lost at all, and that we do need to bring them back. And it's not like you're some Luddite doing that. It's actually about the food that we need to grow. I mean,
and I think now with the kind of people who are involved with seed saving, you know, there's a huge emphasis on producing our own varieties.
Work on locally adaptive seeds. So seeds that adapt to being here and what grows well here. So last year we crossed carrots, two carrots together, different varieties of carrots, different varieties of beetroots. What that does is it then, in the next generation, it gives us loads of diversity and you get a lot of seeds. So what you can do is, you know, you just take them out and you don't mollycoddle them at all. You know, you just throw them out and amongst the slugs and the rooks and whatever. And then whatever grows out of that and sets seed has already been selected by the environment. And then it's just up to us to refine it a bit. There's just three things we need to know, is that all plants make seeds. Good parents and grandparents make good children. About 10 years ago, we weren't having a lot of success with onions. We decided to just get as many varieties of onions when we picked the onions at the end of the year, just select out a load of them. So we had loads of diversity in them. And then we save those and let those go to seed. And then we sow the seeds of those. And we've been doing that for 10 years. And we do about 4 tons. Of onions. We're still eating onions from last year. And we call it the clock onion, which is great because, you know, clock is stone and it's a really hard, powerful onion, which is a sign apparently of nutrient density. If it makes your eyes water, it's high in sulfur compounds and things. I find it exciting anyway. I like to eat. I do like to eat. No.
There are seed savers all over Ireland doing this work, who began their journey with Anita Hayes. People like Madeline McCaver of Brown Envelope Seeds, an organic open-pollinated seed company from West Cork.
We're seeing with our own eyes climate change happening here. There hasn't been one day this winter that you could go out and do anything outside. Too wet. Cold wouldn't really matter, but it's too wet to touch the ground. If you start messing with earth when it's wet, you just destroy the soil structure and, you know, all your nutrients will get washed away and... So we have to start planning for having these kind of winters. And that's what we need the diversity for. Say, I would have liked to have gone out and put, say, broad beans and potatoes and things in March, and peas. And I won't get them in now till who knows when in April. But I actually have a whole lot of other things I could grow. You know, I could set things like corn and quinoa later. We need to have, like, a diversity of crops to grow.
I'm surrounded by your seeds of these, What excites you?
What excites me, blight resistance in potatoes, I think excites me. You don't need GM to do it. And the cereals, especially like gluten-free cereals, because I'm a bit gluten intolerant. One thing I got this year was a hullless oat, which is called Pilcorn, which was last recorded growing in Ireland, I think, in about the late 18th century. And things like such delicious things that we can grow here, like asparagus that my neighbours grow up the road.
Tell me about your tomatoes.
Well, I do have a lot of tomatoes. I do like tomatoes. And because they self-pollinate, you can actually grow a lot of varieties. I have 70 varieties of tomatoes for sale at the moment, I think. And I probably
70?
Yeah, and I probably have two or three times that in my seed bank. And one I got this year called Tim's Taste of Paradise is my absolute favourite for taste now. It has the most amazing flavour, parmesan-y, like really strong umami taste.
Oh, wow. In a tomato?
In a tomato. I mean, tomatoes have a savoury kind of taste, which is why we like them. It's the combination of that savoury and the sweet and the acid. So, yeah.
But most of the ones I eat from the supermarket have no taste. They have a texture. That's all they have.
Like, a lot of people got into organic growing from a health reasons and from a lifestyle reason, but for me it was from the taste point of view. Like, and I suppose it's actually a natural progression to go from cooking to growing vegetables, to saving seed, because you're actually going back to the source, yeah.
And that source is precious, and that source is political, and that source is...
Very much so. I think the movement that we're building is diverse enough and strong enough to outlast that, like, you know. I think 30 years ago when Anita started Seed Savers, nobody had a clue what was coming down the road, but she knew that it was important to save seed, yeah. And it's getting more important every day, like, it really is. Like, if you look at what the way the world is going, this ability to actually save seed, grow your own food, cook your own food, that's not a given anymore, like, you know. It's what's really nice is in dealing with different varieties and that is actually learning, you know, who bred that and where was it developed and how did it come to be in my hand today and how many hands has it been through and all the stories that could be told with that. Like, it's the story of colonialism, it's the story of emigration, it's, you know, it's a food source. And, yeah.
And why do you find that so emotional?
Yeah. I suppose... It's a deep thing. It's, I don't know. It's our ancestry, isn't it? It's our heritage. We often talk in terms of, like, you know, I'm growing stuff in the allotment and it's not, or I'm growing stuff in the garden just out of interest and it'd be nice to have something to eat kind of thing. But actually, it's actually a food source, like, and a lot of people, especially in the developing world, are depending on it, like, you know. And if we lose control of that or whatever, you know, if that gets disrupted, you know, that is serious. I think there's a statistic that something like 3 out of every 4 mouthfuls that we eat has come from seed originally. Like,
this community of seed savers are working to preserve these precious seeds. A community that is quietly growing and is as diverse as the seeds they protect. Seed savers such as Rhonda, who along with her husband Patrick Howell, have a seed company called So Diverse.
The seed have a story. It is our duty to preserve that history of, you know, and to preserve those seeds and to pass them on to the next generation. So what she did in Irish Seed Savers is something that is driving us today to do what we do also. We grow lots of different things that we were told will never grow here. So we grow lots of tomatoes. We have them outdoors. We also grow okra. Which, you know, people would not think would grow here. So we're trying different varieties from everywhere. So we're really trying to bring in genetic diversity from elsewhere into here. So, and we can see that with some varieties that we're growing from elsewhere, like the Syrian green peas, they did fabulously well. Because those seeds have had to struggle in the past in their environment, when you bring them in an environment where they get the water and where they get basically sun also, you know, they actually produce and they have that richness.
Yeah, there's a city in Syria that used to have a phenomenal seed bank. And when the problems started happening, they basically actioned passing it to other countries in the world to secure it because they couldn't secure it in their location anymore.
My family, we come from originally from the Middle East. My grandfathers moved to Africa when there was the Ottoman Empire and they were persecuting, a certain category of people. Part of our family is still in the Middle East, and that's how I came across those seeds. Those seeds, actually, we grew them here, and as I said, they perform very well. And it's great, actually, for me to be here and to be able to reproduce seeds which are very close to my heart and where I live now, And so I hope that, people buying them from us or growing them will actually keep on reproducing this. Because if we don't keep on growing those seeds, basically we are losing a very important part, of our heritage. I'm talking about world heritage here. I'm not just talking about, Irish heritage or Lebanese heritage or Syrian heritage. I'm talking about world heritage. And we need actually to grow these seeds in our gardens to keep them alive.
Where does our cereals come from? Where does the wheat come from? It comes from part of Turkey and Syria. So we should be grateful for these people at this time. We should not forget them where they are now.
This is Michael Miklas, an organic farmer who established the Irish Grain Project, part of Irish Seed Savers. Ireland had previously no collection of native grains. Many varieties were lost. Seeds were repatriated from seed banks around the world, including the Vavilov Institute. Michael, in Piltown, Kilkenny, worked with very small quantities of grain over many years to establish again the native Irish oats, wheat, barley and rye.
Irish Seed Savers made a proposal to the department to repatriate Irish cereals from international gene banks, grow them out, and propagate them. So we have about 40 varieties of cereals saved in an Irish gene bank.
As a grower, Michael is always looking for diversity in what we can grow, offering viable alternatives to imported crops. He has a particular passion and interest in growing nuts as a valuable source of protein.
Cob or hazelnuts or filbert nuts. So, but it's just the hazelnuts, simple as that.
And where could you grow them?
You can grow them nearly everywhere in Ireland. And you could grow them on the more marginal land. You can grow it also in the damper areas. You could grow them on the bog without damaging the bog. You can make a hazelnut milk, you can, you can make an oil, you can make an hazelnut butter. So there's a palette of uses for it.
But it's not something that you'd even think about, that Ireland could actually produce nuts.
Yes, and that's the lack of thinking outside the box. How shall I say it? It's the last bell has rung. We have to be active. We have to think outside of the box. And we have to do new practices. So types of nuts which might grow in Ireland well is Pinus pinea. It's for pine nuts, walnuts. And all the benefits of all the trees is they absorb carbon. We don't need machines to absorb carbon. We need plants to absorb carbon. What should we choose?
The diversity is what does it for me, because it's not just the diversity in our natural fauna and flora, but the diversity in our agricultural crops as well. Is like you said, it's diminished so much. I've just done a deep dive into runner beans. They're a 7,000-year-old plant in cultivation, again from Oaxaca in Mexico, along with chocolate and tomatoes and courgettes and squashes and peppers and maize. Amazing people who took all of this ancient plants and worked with them. In Oaxaca, they call it ayacote, and ayacote means the fat bean. And when you look at a runner bean seed, It's much bigger than a kidney bean. And they're absolutely gorgeous. And they're a great protein source. Now, to instigate them into our culture as a winter food, really, as a protein source. So,
a protein source we don't have to import.
Exactly, yeah. And they really like it here, but here last year I produced loads and loads and loads of them.
These seed savers are working to protect our crop diversity. They are quietly growing these gorgeous varieties of fruit and vegetables, preserving both our heritage and securing our food for the future. This is a community connected through seeds.
Yeah, it's metaphors as well. You know, people are seeds. So all the seed savers were seeds and they've gone out and seeded.
I think for me, the story is community. The story is cooperation and that nothing's impossible. Nothing's impossible. And to never give up. Really. And I think that's something that if I was to pass on anything to people doing it now, it's that.
Yeah, it's again, it's that connection, community. You know, we have a global community that we're connected to. But we created it at Seed Savers. Kind of, everybody thought we were a bunch of hippies, but we weren't, really. We wanted to be, but we were too involved in it to be hippies. And they're not mine. They're not my seeds. I'm just here for a short time just to help them move along. And this is what Anita would, that's what she gave us. She gave us this kind of humility, which apparently comes from the dirty feet of the farmers that came to Rome. Being humble. It's having dirty feet.
That's gorgeous.
Ireland owes her a debt.
Yes.
You know, I mean, in the context of sometimes the kind of racism and everything that you hear, like, emerging in Ireland, whatever, for Irish people are generally not like that. And Anita, who came from the States, I'm never so glad that somebody was sleepless in Seattle, that she met Tommy Hayes when he was playing the Baron in Seattle and that they came back to Ireland. And she might say that it's the country with the slanty grey rain, but actually it was a good place for her to come and plant herself, because we are hugely indebted to her and I'm very, very glad for that. So very, very grateful to Anita for being here and for what she's done. And that it's kind of up to the rest of us and the generations coming after to kind of run with the baton now.
And everybody who's carried it from us on, you know, all the people who worked there for very little money for a very long time, a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility. It's still a lot of pressure and a lot of responsibility. It's not like a barrel of laughs. But if I look back now, every door I pushed on personally, I had the easy ride. Every door I pushed on personally went, oh, come on in. I mean, we always knew that was the end of our, me and Tommy's dream. At Gene Bank. And I thought maybe for 50 years. You know, we probably won't ever see that, you know, but it's there. And that community, Gene Bank and Seed Savers, is a treasure. Maybe in 30 years, there'll be young scientists using those seeds that people have worked so hard to maintain and preserve to figure out how to deal with, I mean, the rain. The rain.
Thank you.
Groundbreakers, Anita Hayes, is a Curious broadcast production funded by Commission Le Mans with a television license fee. Produced and narrated by Patricia Baker. Final mix, Brian Fleming, Context Studio. The final musical track is Raindrops by Tommy Hayes and Ian Leslie from their album Almost Home. Groundbreakers music is by Jerry Horn. Yodel-dum-dum-dee-yodel-doo-day-doo-da-doo-dum-dum-dee-yodel-doo-day-doo-da.